Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
All right. I am very excited today because we are going back to some of our previous types of episodes where we bring in people and interview them and learn from their richness and expertise. And today we actually have Dr. Katie here on our call. And not only is she a former colleague and friend, she is an awesome advocate and professional in the neurodiverse space. So Dr. Katie is the owner and founder of Autism Nerd, the Neurodiverse Education Resource of Denver, which supports learning different students and their families in the prep, planning, placement, and persistence of post-high school educational goals. After 20 years of employment at five different types of colleges and a PhD in higher education leadership, she was inspired by parenting her two neurodiverse children, including serving as their IEP advocate in her local public schools. So after having advised academic plans for thousands of enrolled college students and currently as a neurodiversity community advocate, Dr. Katie has seen up close how many students are challenged in college persistence and the college application process. Katie's goal with Autism Nerd is to support students, families, and fellow ed consultants in understanding what's involved with bridging college capable to college ready skill sets. Similarly, she offers an eye on how to support a transitional match between a student's current learning accommodations and what's needed and available in the variety of post-high school education options. You can learn more about Dr. Katie on her website at autismnerd.com, as well as through our conversation today. And as I highlighted in her bio and mentioned at the start, we are bringing in an expert and advocate here in our presence. So we're so grateful that you could join us, Dr. Katie, today. So what else would you like to share about your background?
Thank you so much. No, I just really appreciate being here today. And this is fantastic that I can share with your audience a little bit about my world. So I recognize myself as an IEC or independent education consultant. And I'm actually affiliate with two different professional associations kind of related to that. So IECA, Independent Education Consultant Association, is an international membership group, as well as the Colorado College Consultants, which is for consultants that reside in or have a primary client base here in Colorado, but they might work with clients anywhere. And so when I've spent all this time on college campuses, Erin, you and I know each other from having worked at CU Boulder in academic advising there, and you know your work on academic coaching, executive function skills, like supporting persistence for enrolled college students is really not that far off from what I do in my work, except I'm looking at it from the college admissions lens. And so a lot of college consultants like myself are supporting students through the application process. So often that is something like, you know, an 18-month or two-year sort of process to prepare extracurriculars, which best courses are you taking, you know, AP, IB, concurrent enrollment, SAT, ACT prep, potentially, you know, writing the college essay is such a process and self-actualization for any young teen, right? So there's a lot involved with those pieces, which I can support a student in doing. And further, I have this specialty lens on students that might be under an LDND profile. So typically that's referred to as the neurodivergent or neurodiverse and learning different sorts of students. So students that in a public school setting might have IEP or 504, but similarly, you know, students in charter, private school, homeschool, virtual school sort of settings where they just need, you know, alternative learning, right? Like they might know themselves to just be able to learn better in some sort of alternative learning setting. And so I'm supporting students that have this sort of neurodistinct or learning different profile in transitioning to educational environments or what sort of educational options might be available after high school graduation. And there's actually 10 different categories of types of educational settings that individuals can be in, right? So it's not just you go to college, you do a bachelor's degree. Certainly within those 10 categories, not only the bachelor's degree, but a community college, trade school, technical school, but there are 10 total categories like that as far as, independent living or apprenticeship that folks might be able to get into. So I support navigation of all those options. So I spend a lot of time just like knowing what the community options are, but also what are the community resources that might be paired onto or, partner with someone that might choose community college. They don't necessarily have an academic coaching program, or sometimes it's referred to as fee-for-service programs within certain embedded within a college model. But might there be community resources that might additionally be able to support that student through persistence of whatever their final educational goal is? So that is another way that I distinguish myself in the educational consulting world, is that a lot of ed consultants might focus on the admissions process or prep planning placement where a student might attend, but I add a fourth P, which is persistence, and the goal is graduation, right? And I actually distinguish that there are pretty different skill sets that are essential between, finishing high school and transitioning to a bachelor's granting sort of college, and what is actually going to be necessary to be successful en route all the way to college graduation, which, Erin, is how you and I know each other, because we've done a lot of work in that arena. So that's the nutshell of kind of the type of work I do. And then Autism Nerd, the name of my business, or Neurodiverse Education Resources of Denver, it's a little bit tongue in cheek as well, but it's actually research-based, because one of the primary indicators for persistence, like how is someone going to be able to best support themselves in making it through to college graduation and transition to independent life and beyond, is if they're able to recognize and have the self-awareness of, this is what my diagnostic name is, or like, this is what I know myself to be. And so a family that works with me typically comes to me because not only do they know they need learning accommodations, but they recognize that they have this NDLD component, oftentimes autism. I'm just very active in that community. So to name my business kind of with recognizing both the empowerment of being able for a teen to be able to say, this is who I am and this is what I need, and also just to embrace and empower the families that need the type of support and resource that I offer, is really what led to the inception of starting my business.
That is so great to hear what you're doing, especially coming from like a personal standpoint. I have neurodifferent children, and we've been actually pretty lucky with the support that we've gotten in terms of like an individual education program. And my daughter has a 504. So, and she actually advocated for herself to ask for that because the way that she shows up is intelligent, mature, and she was able to express that, even though she did really well in middle school, but she was finding it difficult to concentrate, to take tests, to do in-class writing, and she was able to see that in herself. So when she transitioned from middle school to high school, she said, "Mom and Dad, I need this. I'm a really good student and I'm in this tech program, so I really need this extra support." So she actually advocated for herself and talked to a teacher, and we got that process going. But I also work in nonprofit, and I've had situations where children who have learning differences are not as supported as we've seen with my kids. And to know that there is a resource out there for families, especially, because I think that's so important to be able to support the family, to support the parents and the guardians when they are wanting the best for their children and don't have the tools because we did not go through traditional schooling knowing, first of all, that there are learning differences. And second of all, how do we navigate the school system when there are needs that need to be met that aren't traditionally met? It's just so great to know that you have this resource. And I feel really grateful that Erin and I can have you on our podcast so that our listeners can know about this resource. It's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sean, thank you for sharing your own family's journey. And I just want to highlight for your daughter to be able to speak up for herself, not only to her parents, but in a school setting, that is the best case scenario for any type of student, right? What I would kind of tell families in line of that, because oftentimes there can be contention or like, we're not getting this sort of support in school, or what are we supposed to do with this? Because this is what we see at home, and what school sees is different what home sees. Or, you know, to have the student, one, be able to speak up for themselves. For two, for a family to know, it's not just about like the resources that are available, because I'm involved with nonprofit. I'm in like a community connector, right? But also just to be able for families to say, like, I don't know what I don't know, but I want my kid to be happy. Or how do I make sense of all these different things? Or how do we find our right place? And I have seen a lot of families that come out thriving, but it's two steps forward, three steps back in some cases, right? Like, you know, there are a lot of fantastic resources and services, but just being open and receptive to finding a way to make sense of it all, because there can be so much. But truly, for a student to be able to say for themselves, this is what I need and this is what I know of myself, that is the best possible first step of being able to make sense of all of the options. So, you know, in light of that, what I bring to the table with a family is I kind of do an initial evaluation process, and we can talk a little bit about that like as we go. But it's also for me, I mean, I feel like my responsibility, like my asset, is that I know a lot of different programs from the inside. And so if I do an initial evaluative process, and let's say it's a student that really could have the potential to thrive at a place like Colorado School of Mines or a CU Boulder, right? But they just need a little extra community boost, or they just need a little extra, right, of something. Thing. Like, I would want that for them, because I want them to make the most of what are the resources already at their fingertips? What are the free services that they might already be getting in the school system that they're at? But I also make it a point of knowing what are the fully one-stop shop, holistic wraparound resources for the family that's amenable to that, but we can't have all these different sorts of places, or what is that specialty college that might be located, you know, wherever, that is intentionally built, that college built to have that holistic wraparound support. So with all of that, like in addition to the student being able to speak up for themselves or communicate, right? I don't want to put it completely on speaking up, because I recognize apraxia is a dynamic of neurodistinctness as well. So communicate in a variety of different modalities, but to be open and trusting and working with someone like myself, that I do have the student's best interest in mind, because the expectations management piece and getting the family on the same page in what they can expect out of an experience in that transition process. What can they expect in a college? What should they not expect in a certain type of college? Or what can they expect in, you know, maybe an add-on executive function coach or something like that from the community? But maybe when do they truly need those kind of added level services that a college might offer in-house, right? Like those sorts of things. And trusting that I have the best interest, that, you know, I'm going to put 3 to 5 options in front of you. But the reason I put those 3 to 5 options is because I truly believe you need that level of support, or you need that right sort of thing. I would say that I'm so glad to hear, and thank you for sharing your personal kind of story. And I'm glad to hear that your daughter is in a place where she can do that for herself, and for like broadly for, you know, your listeners and for anyone that might be in consideration of either hiring or working with, you know, coach or consultant. These individuals are educated and are experts for the reason that they are. And that's why they're making the suggestion and putting that in front of you. So I think that's significant for your audience.
As you were talking, it made me wonder more about your story and like how you got to where you're at. So I'd like to know a little bit more about how you got to where you're at with your business specifically, and how you have been able to know the ins and outs of some of these organizations you mentioned, as well as know the breadth of the collegiate landscape, because that's a lot to hold, a lot of knowledge, a lot of information to be able to distill that down in meaningful ways for your students that you're working with. So I'd love to hear more on that side, and then we can talk a little bit more on your personal side too, but let's start there.
So, I mean, as far as starting my business came from a place of like, I just dove in with 2 feet. It's not that I like knew how to swim first, right? Like, I just happened to be in a life circumstance that, and this was like the 6 months before COVID. And so it was one of those things where like I had 2 young children. So when COVID hit, my kids were 2 and 7. And it was the 6 months just prior to that, particularly for my older child. We were making a number of school changes. We weren't quite like settled with our IEP yet. You know, we had been presented with this autism thing. What does this mean? I had a couple of job changes because I was trying to accommodate my schedule for their therapies that they needed, right? And so I left working in a traditional college setting. I had worked at 5 different colleges up to that point, 6 months before COVID. I left that last collegiate environment mostly because I needed to accommodate my son's therapy schedule. And so in my mind, I was like, but I still want to be a professional. Like that feeds me, that feeds my soul, like to know that I'm still a part of a professional community, that I'm still learning. So literally like created an LLC before I even knew what I was doing for that business. You know, started a website, did a little bit of blogging, this, that, and the other. You know, like I'm again up to my eyebrows in therapy. It's like 25 hours a week of therapy for my oldest son when I have this like baby in tow. And then COVID happened, and then we're homeschooling on top of that, right? And then it's pile and pile. And then I feel actually in hindsight, the timing was so ideal because my older son was in a sped route. He was in our local public school district has a center-based elementary program, and he was transferred to that. I also within about 6 months right before COVID. So when COVID happened, I mean, he came home with everybody else. We spent that whole spring and summer, you know, like in our garage, playing in a garage basically. And but he was one of the first kids in our public school district that got to go back to school the following year. So how fortunate in hindsight that I was plugged right back into community resources. And it was right around that same timing that I was asked to join the board of directors for the Autism Society of Colorado. We've had some leadership transition there, but that was an outlet that I could just one, provide some community leadership, but like use what I know, wear a professional hat, and also just have access to what are all these community resources, like the number of therapeutic providers. Autism Society of Colorado has a 40-year history of being a premier information and referral resource. And so just long-standing history of community relationships. And then I found myself on the board for that, like working on pro right. And so that just gave me this beautiful inroad to like know what was available, mostly because I wanted to do that for my own son. But you know, here we are, you know, 4 or 5 years later. Now what I do for my own children, also having had the experience of having worked at 5 different colleges, that is the mindset that I aim to offer for families, right? Like I don't want to just keep it for my kids, but like what I do for my kids, I want to be able to do for other families. And that's the bottom line of my business. You know, fast forward, I guess another year, I was on Amazon just looking for like book referrals, frankly, and how random that I have a lot of textbooks in my library, go figure, but it came up this book that it's called A Student of Colleges, the IEC Guidebook. It's like how to create an IEC business was a recommended read, my Amazon books. And, you know, immediately, like, just I got this book, found out that the person that wrote the book is a grandfather of this industry, of this field, was one of the founders for IECA, was one of the founders for Colorado College Consultants, lives in Denver, still practices, right? Like, and so I've since had a chance to meet the author of this book, and I've gotten plugged into these fantastic professional communities. They're not the only ones for ed consultants, so I do want to add that caveat. HECA is another one, NACAC is another one. They all have their regional affiliates, but I'm a firm believer of professional association. membership and ongoing learning, just like lifelong learning, and leaning into your network and being able to ask the hard questions to people you trust when it comes to a challenging case or something along those lines. So I've really leaned into that, and I think it was because of that professional networking that I've refined my approach, like just sort of landed on what makes me distinct in the IEC landscape and just drawing from the lifetime of career experience that I've had at a variety of different colleges and like knowing the college landscape here in the US, that has made me develop the evaluation package or the initial college readiness evaluation that I offer and why I think that's an asset to families that need it. So that's the nutshell of my story that kind of brings my business up to where we are today.
Well, I love how organic your story is and how courageous you were in just jumping in. And your business grew out of a need that you needed to meet for your son. And then you're extending that to other parents, other families that are experiencing the same situation. One of the things that came to mind when you were talking is our podcast is called Coaching as Benevolence. And I thought that your story epitomizes benevolence. It epitomizes consulting, consultation as benevolence, because not only were you doing your best with the information that you had for your family, for your son, you were compassionate enough to do that for others. And that was really an inspiration to hear, so moving to hear, and that you are so caring and compassionate. I realize how important it is to have a community, to have resources, and to know that there are other options besides, as you were saying, public school, but also other options, alternative education. And I think that's so important. So thank you so much for what you do. And I'm just really moved by the kindness and compassion that you have and how mission driven you are.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. I would say that kind of another piece of it, there are a lot of families of high school students today, particularly in more affluent communities, for better or worse, that recognize a private college consultant is an asset to their student. And a lot of families are utilizing that sort of support. I mean, I think I've heard in the New York City area, like 85% of families are using a college consultant, whereas typically it's more like 15 to 20% in other parts of the country, right? And so some of it just has grown out of like a recognized need of like, how do I make sense of the college landscape? But I think a piece that's a little bit different that is genuinely what you were saying is that like, I don't want to just keep this information to myself. Like, my kids are benefited tremendously because of what I know and what I've experienced. And I want to be able to support other families the way that I would want to be supported the same way. With that, it's a little bit of a slippery slope because I think there's a lot of parents out there that will interview, however many college consultants, and every college consultant can kind of they set up their business their own way, right? Like they do it a little bit differently. And there has to be a match and understanding between what the student's real abilities and needs are with what the parent recognizes and the direction that they're going, and then also the type of consultant that's able to meet those needs and manage the potential difference of expectation between the student and the parent too, right? And so yes, I want to do for others what I would do for myself, but managing expectations I think is first and foremost when it comes to that, because I have been interviewed by a number of families and prospective clients, and they might choose to go elsewhere. They might choose like their needs are different, or there have been clients that I've started working with that the mom is realistic, but maybe dad is less so. Or what I see for the student's needs initially is actually like I see something really different 6 months down the line, And so being trusted effectively as the expert, I think, is one of the ways that families or my clients get the most and get the best benefit out of me as an asset, that they trust my expertise, but that they also recognize that kind of what their dream college might be or where they're going, there might be a more winding path in order to, it doesn't mean that it's off the table. And I tell this to folks all the time. There might be very much a potential, but we want to get you to the finish line. We want persistence to be the goal, not admissions to be the goal. And those are different skill sets. And being trusted as the expert to support or refer, like when particular skill set development is essential, is all a part of that process. There's just a lot there.
Yeah. Well, and as part of that process, it sounds like there's a lot of communication, and that is a big part in obviously our podcasts, just talking with people and talking amongst ourselves, as well as in the coaching space where we tend to talk a lot less, but still communication matters just as much. So maybe you could talk a little bit about how you manage those expectations through your communication, or what do you find is most effective when talking with families and students?
When I am outreach, right? Somebody fills out the contacts form on my website as a prospective. There's typically an interview. I receive a lot of medical information typically in that first meeting just because families have often been through a lot. But two, it's like an initial kind of feel out, like, is this going to be a match? And they're interviewing me as much as I would say I'm interviewing them. And you know, the family might be talking to five people just like me, which I agree with. They should go with whoever's the best fit. But at the same time, like, I am also looking for the parents to present themselves in a way that I feel like they're going to be wholly honest and communicate with me to the degree that it's most beneficial for their child or student, right? So I would say, like, that's a first step. And there have been cases where someone reaches out to me, we have that interview, and I'm like, this is not something that I can work with. Like, the parent is going to push me in a direction because they want their kid to do a certain thing. And you're not throwing money at me to get your kid into X college, right? Like, I don't work that way. And at the same time, it's if the medical need is too great, I can provide some guidance and serve as a guidepost and support, you know, connecting all these different pieces. But at the same time, like, if a family is also not willing to put in for those additional resources that are going to holistically make the most of my time, then what am I supposed to do too? So I think it's just being realistic off the bat. So that's why I actually, my discovery call can be up to an hour sometimes because I'm just taking in so much information. And if we get through that first discovery call, and then it's like, you know what, but I really need to have a second discovery call with the student, I'll do that. And I don't want to charge for that time. Like, I want it to be a right fit. So then I move into, if it is, we move ahead. Here's my contract. I have, like, you know, an e-sign platform, initial retainer, and I kind of bill out for 5 hours at a time. So sometimes ed consultants will have a large retainer, or you'll do it in like two or three chunks over like a 2 year period. I don't want someone to continue with me for that long if it's not a good match either, right? Or if the family gets to a point where they realize, like, whoa, independent living is not as close as we thought it was going to be, or we really need to wrangle up this executive function and we only have so many resources. We need to have a true, measurable, goal-oriented executive function program before we can even think about college. Like, I rather those resources for that family go there. Circle back with me when you're ready, right? So, or if it's a case of, you know, you just have me for like 1 hour at a time and it takes a year for that kind of first initial 5 hour package, like, I'm okay with that. Like, let's touch test base. But I don't want you to feel that our communication is also going to be hindered because you haven't paid for that time. Like, I'd rather you like send me those emails and not charge for it, right? Than feel like you can't and then I don't get enough of the right information. But in context of that communication piece, I have what I call my 2+5 college readiness package. And something that I do that I think is really unique in the ed consulting space is that part of that initial 5 hour, if as much as possible, we can at least allocate 2 hours of that to an in-person meeting. I'm really able to see that student kind of in their natural environment. And it's a different kind of communication in person versus virtual. I will stand by that all day. And most ed consultants, I mean, I think the research that came out last year was even since COVID, most college consultants moved to a virtual-only model. And even today, it's like 95% of folks are, they've created their curriculum and they're delivering it online entirely. Whereas in my readiness package, like I am looking at these kind of 2 + 5 dynamics and giving my recommendation on each of those 7 categories. And the first one is the documentation. So that first hour, like right after the contract, the next thing the family sends me is your documentation. You got your IEP, your 504, your neuropsych eval. You did a summer program and you got a report out of it. Like, I want to see all of that. And then hours 2 and 3, I'll make a home visit and actually see that student in their natural environment. And I believe that gives an opportunity to jumpstart my recommendations. And that sets the roadmap. That gives me a sense of what we're really working with. And all the ones that I've done to date have been really positive. That does limit the type of client that can work with me to the Denver metro area as of right now. So, I mean, I'm getting a lot of referral requests from other consultants in other parts of the country of how do I jumpstart that process so I make sure that I'm not giving wrong information or this is a client that I can actually work with. So those scale questions when I am really trying to hold on to that hybrid approach is critical. And I don't have an answer for that question yet, but I do feel like, specifically in like, how do you communicate, right? Like I try to have things both verbal and written, virtual and in person. There's this balance of these dynamics of how communication comes across. And also, like in many cases, like teach the client about assistive technology and don't wait until the college offers you the option for assistive technology. There's no reason why you can't get your 15-year-old practicing with the lecture recording apps or like the LiveScript pen or like, right, like these sorts of pieces that there's no reason to wait until the college offers it. Get familiar with the technology as far as the variety of how that supports communication and then in exchange, learning and information retention. At some point, I would like to go into, and maybe this is a segue, like what are those 2 + 5 areas? Like, what am I looking for in context of college readiness? And like I said, college capable is the college application. Where is the student at as far as the type of high school courses that they've taken, the type of extracurricular involvements, the types of colleges that they might be applying to? Is that a match? Like, do they meet minimum admission standards for the, whatever their goal college is? That is a different set of skills compared to what I frame as college ready. There's college admissions capable, and then there's college ready, which is graduation or persistence. And so those sorts of skills are just the 7 that I go through. So the 2 for the family, documentation, or like if a student is enrolling in learning accommodations, what's necessary for that college? Every college is a little different as far as their disability services registration process. So what sorts of documentation is necessary for that? Again, every college is a little different in how they handle that, but do they have the right documentation for the type of college that we're seeking? Financial fit. Like I feel it's a moral imperative to not put these super high-priced programs in front of someone that's going to put them into debt or that's like not going to produce the outcomes that they need, right? So there has to be a financial match. And then particularly the skill sets for the student. So what I say is graduation ready skill sets, academic acumen. So does the student like know what their major is? Like they're interested in engineering. Okay, great. We're looking at engineering programs. Can they keep up with the grades and that those sorts of classes? Self-advocacy. So do they have an ability to say, I have a right to accommodation because I have autism? Like you don't have to go on and on about your diagnosis, but I have a right to and to stand up for yourself and to know how to navigate a system well enough to know who is the person you need to talk to within that system to assure that you are self-advocated. Self-awareness. So that piece of like, I need some calm down time. I know that I'm going to be better capable in that 200 person lecture hall if I have a solo dorm room and I have a place to decompress. Or how are you sort of juggling that difference between like the tolerance and resilience and the stressors that you're going to face in any sort of college environment, because that's inherent. Executive functioning or the self-management, self-organizing skills. I often recognize there's some possibly some med management pieces involved, right? Like Does the student know how to take their own medication? Have they titrated it correctly? Have we gone through the timing necessary to titrate what that med is? Or is it still like that's something we're tweaking with? Are you able to fill your prescriptions? Do you know where to get it, right? Like, so some clinicians are state-based. Are you going to a college that's still going to be within that state where you can access, right? Like your therapist is licensed, you have a weekly session, you know how to keep it. Can that person access you, like, right, wherever you're at? So are we looking at only Colorado-based resources because you need to keep that weekly appointment and your clinician or therapist is only licensed in Colorado. That is going to be how we make that decision, right? Like that's the potential for it. And then finally, of the five, motivation and confidence. And this is actually like when we talk about that initial intake and the communication piece, is the student actually interested? Is the student driving the bus here or is mom and dad driving the bus here, right? So are they motivated? Are they confident? Are they ready to show up? Are they excited by the prospect? And if they're not, like, I mean, I have a client right now. I think they're fantastic. They're just like, I'm not excited about school. That's fine, right? Like, we are looking at all of those different categories of what the potential for your next steps could be, because you know what? Like, something has to happen. Chronologically, you're going to get to high school graduation and you have to make a choice on something. So let's put those options out there. Let's have you try this camp. Let's have you try this workshop. What's going to stick? What's not going to stick? How do we talk about like tolerance and resilience building? What are the self-coping mechanisms that you're going to need to be able to balance that out? Because you can't just live in mom and dad's basement forever. Like that's, those are the things that we talk about. So just in summary, those five: academic acumen, self-advocacy, self-awareness, executive functioning, also known as self-management, and finally, motivation and confidence. And then the two most important pieces for the family: financial fit. And what I say drives this whole ship is documentation. So it's a documentation first mindset. So, a lot of colleges that Aaron, you and I have both worked at, they have a requirement of you need a medical diagnosis within 3 years of that first registration with disability services. So that's great that the family got your autism diagnosis when you were in second grade and you've had an IEP all the way through. But guess what? You go to register for that college for accommodation services and learning accommodations, the diagnostic from second grade is not going to fit the bill. But then there might also be potential, like, are you doing, summer community college, or you want to do this summer program on the other part of the country? They're going to need that as well. So the timing with documentation is so precarious. Who does it? Which college accepts what level of, kind of report? Like all these sorts of pieces. That is what I aim to just like have in my wheelhouse and have an understanding for. And I have to admit, I'm learning new things all the time, but this is why that professional development and leaning into my network and asking questions and touring colleges and visiting and right, all those sorts of things are so imperative, because that is kind of what a family needs to know when it comes to the, especially I think that timing and appropriate documentation to register for learning accommodations in college.
That's a lot. But when you were going through those 5 points and just repeating that, it was really clear and it seemed doable. Like if I were a parent and I was working with you, oh yeah, that's doable. Okay, I can see that. So I am curious, do you have a story of like success or like a challenge that you were able to overcome that really illustrates, what it's like for a family or a child to benefit from your services?
It's a big question, but I think such an important question too. And I have a very recent case that I'll keep generic, right, for these purposes, but has really been a learning experience for me. And it's fresh that this occurrence came up. So I think it's both very timely, but I think poignant, particularly when I was talking about expectations management. So I've been working with this family for about 6 months. Everything was really great as far as the onboarding. Parents are professionals. Mom was a really great communicator. Did all the initial pieces, got the documentation right away. This is a student with an IEP. Did a home visit in this case, met with the family. The student was very engaged in the process. So four of us were sitting at the kitchen table. schedule was on, right? Like, I mean, it was a 2-hour exact meeting. It was a little bit like, okay, everything is like kind of going swimmingly. And then I was under the impression the student understood the assignment. And yet we started in July working on the essay component of it. What I saw in this case was the student had a lot of support, but they also had strong abilities. But there were some social components that were going to be their biggest inhibitor, at least in the admissions process, right? Like, who are you in context of your community is a big question in college admissions, particularly for those more highly selective. They're typically called like low yield, right? Like the Ivies are going to have your less than 5% is their yield rate. And that's actually how they get prioritized in the US News and World Report as far as like best colleges, right? And that's a little bit of a misnomer. And I don't want people to get too caught up in that, but it is something that parents see and students, you know, they think about. And so this student had kind of engineering, math, STEM inclination, great, but the social skills, especially in context of needing to work in a team environment, and engineering schools just require team. That's the bottom line. And so I had shared with this family, I was like, I think that we could easily go to their first choice, but we got to work on a 3-year timeline here because they're graduating from high school. This was a senior, but we need a couple of years to work on those social skills. And I have some great recommendations. I've got some EF kind of pieces that I think can be measurable, and we can really like kind of work towards that. But for whatever reason, it was in the student's mindset that they were only going to be applying to their top choice colleges this fall. And yet we couldn't even make progress. I mean, this was like 3 or 4 appointments where they couldn't make progress on the essay component of it. And that's when it came as a little bit of a surprise to me, but at the same time, it's in my contract language that if this isn't working, like let's go our separate ways, right? Like I will refund that portion of your retainer. Like we're just going to make a clean break out of it. And that's actually what ended up happening because the mom was able to see that the student just couldn't understand the assignment of what is a college admissions essay and that it needs to be personal. And that there was some social skill development that needed to happen. And if we're going to be spending all this energy, like just looking at these certain types of colleges, especially during senior year where there's these, all these other pieces, they're, you know, planning on taking their SAT for a second time, they're taking some AP classes, like that's fantastic. But the chances of admission for those lower yield colleges when they don't have the social skills or social component, like it just reduced their chances significantly. And so then it was like, well, what are we spending this time on? And what are we like kind of building the stress up for? Because my priority is stress mitigation and reducing stress in that process. Whereas like then it just became a fight of like, why can't we get over this one? Like I felt confident in my approach and my recommendation and why I had said the things that I had said. And ultimately, like the student wasn't amenable to continuing the relationship because they didn't like what I had to say. They didn't like it was 3-year timeline instead of, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do. And yeah, it's going to be stressful, but stress be damned. And I'm going to crash and burn anyway. Right. Like I didn't want that for them, but that's not what they wanted to hear. So, I mean, I think what sort of what I would hope that that would illustrate is that like when I'm working with someone, if we can't get on the same page as far as expectation, and I think we, like that was multiple hours, like just over this one piece. Like we just couldn't get on the same page about it. I would have been welcome. Save your retainer, come back to me in 6 months, right? Like family, figure it out. You hit your next guidepost. You reach out to me when you're ready. We're gonna figure it out at that point. But you know, they needed to do what they needed to do, and I'm gonna be okay with that. So it was a challenge, but I think to me, it's a lesson learned that my contract language is the way it is for a reason. And, you know, I want folks to be able to utilize me as they need it and for the expert that I am, but I need to be trusted and I need to be a guidepost. I don't have a magic wand. I can't like, you know, get you into Yale if you're just not going to be a candidate for, you know, whatever it is. I don't have a magic wand in that way either. So I mean, I trust what I know. I trust my lane. I feel like I'm capable at referring when I know that it's not my, or like if I know a family only has so many resources, like I want to spread those around as much as possible. But I also know that like I need to be trusted as the expert and I have confidence in my expertise. And yeah, for me, that's the bottom line.
And I think that really highlights your professionalism and your vulnerability to share that example here with us, with our listeners. I think it's so invaluable and so important because not only is it about the honesty piece, but also having confidence in the work that you do, knowing that you're the expert. And that can be really challenging sometimes, especially for female entrepreneurs. So I wanted to highlight that piece that came up because I think it's such a testament to that and an example of that. And I think this is a good segue into our coaching nuggets of wisdom. At the end of each episode, we provide a coaching nugget of wisdom, each of us. And then that concludes our episode. Before we do that, is there anything else you want to share?
Oh my goodness, it's just a joy to be able to chat with you all. And I'm so passionate about what I do. And I was at a family reunion this summer and I just had family members like come up to me and say, I think you've finally landed in your right place. And like that is where my confidence grows from, you know, that like I know that I've had this trajectory and this journey and like, you know, worked my tail off to get a PhD, quite frankly, like in hindsight, wasn't even sure of like why was that worth it? Like that sort of thing. But now like I'm Dr. Katie to my clients for a reason too. Like I'm not like throwing that around because I'm just trying to throw my weight around. I really feel like I've landed on my expertise at this crossroads that I never expected, right? Like working on college campuses, like Erin, you know this, like we've worked with so many students over the years, and I never had this understanding of neurodivergence. I never had this understanding of why is this EF challenge, or like when the students in my office and they're having this issue, like that I could have recommended or referred or seen something through that. And now that I'm seeing it through the eyes of my kids and what I do to support my kids in their educational journey, like that has completely shifted the way that I can approach working with a student and a client and empathize with a family. And yeah, so I mean, out of all of those reasons, for me, it's been a long journey, but I feel like having a private practice and like making it mission driven and being a parent empathizer and like just wanting to utilize like what I know of the higher ed landscape and topography and like how complicated it is and just take these like huge and different buckets of information and find a way to bring them together and like helping a kid get on the right path, right? Like that is the mission that I'm intended to be on. And so yeah, it's really my privilege that I can like kind of be able to do that even, I feel. And I love being able to have these conversations because it makes me realize things. And if I can touch your audience, or like if somebody can follow, you know, hear this and follow up and say, you know, Katie, can you help me for where I'm at? Like that is the best case scenario. So I just really appreciate you all having this platform and that I can chat with you about all this today.
Yes, thank you so much. My coaching nugget of wisdom is when you listen to this episode, I want our listeners to really listen to Dr. Katie. She is the epitome of congruence. You can tell how passionate she is about what she does. And that passion converts to confidence. My coaching nugget of wisdom would be, how can you also be congruent in your passion and your mission and your purpose in life, just like Dr. Katie. And Dr. Katie, thank you so much for your wisdom, for your knowledge, for your kindness, and for the clarity that you have offered to parents out there who have children who are navigating the education system, not just people who have neurodifferences, but even people who don't. I think this is very valuable. So thank you so much.
And I'll share my nugget of wisdom is that we all need collaborators. We all need thought partners. We all need help in various aspects of our life. And part of that is seeking the right help and trying things on, as Katie mentioned. And so I want to highlight just one more thing from Dr. Katie about the way that she provides help is so thoughtful with the seven factors and the extensive evaluation process she uses. So when you're out there looking for help, make sure you find people like her who have your best interests at heart. Today, we were so grateful to interview Dr. Katie, the owner and founder of Autism Nerd. Autism Nerd is the neurodiverse education resource of Denver. Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate you. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Meychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.